Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You are listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I am Chuck Griffith.
Okay, Chuck, let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
Yeah, my hot take is that companies are just hiring the wrong talent to work and manage with AI. AI is getting better at execution, but the most valuable skill is going to be judgment. So I think the leaders in AI are going to not come from just engineering. It's going to be about people who think right, reason, make sense of all the complexity.
I'm really interested to talk about this because I get every level of spectrum on this show of AI is going to take your jobs and we're all going to live in some utopia in which nobody has to work and we all just live on the beach and live our best lives. Or some the other spectrum of it of, oh, AI is not going to really take your job. It's a flash in the pan. This is a tool and nothing more. It feels like maybe you fall somewhere in between, that AI is going to take some of our jobs, the execution-y things that we don't all want to do. Tell us more about that. And did I get that right or did I get that wrong?
No, I think you're exactly right. But I think that the jobs are just going to change. That the requirements with the job, what is a coder? Is it going to be a mechanic that sort of is able to get the machine's syntax and try to come up with the outcomes that we want? Or is it going to be more about not needing to know Python, but more about storytelling? Yeah. What I tell my friends is it's the revenge of the humanities major, which I couldn't be more happy about being a humanities undergrad and graduate. It helped me in my career and user experience, and it definitely helps in the way that my firm approaches problems with our clients.
It's so funny that you said coder as an example, because that totally resonates with me. I actually recently used ChatGPT to write a Python script for me so that I could format the data in some way that I needed it for my analytics platform. And I was more saying, okay, this is the type of data that I think is underlying. This is the type of story that I think is in this numbers. Help me format it and structure it a way to tell that story. And of course, I'm not thinking this eloquently as I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to get my data formatted. But you're exactly right. I had a story that I knew was buried somewhere in the data, but I needed the code and the Python script to organize it in a way that I could uncover it.
Yeah, it's this sort of the leading way to approach how an AI might actually do your coding as that vibe coding that everybody talks about is in terms of you're overlooking the code. I think at a point, you know, in anything that we do in terms of a task, we're overlooking the output. I call it with our firm, I call it vibe designing, right? If we're putting together a customer journey, I'm going to put in as many human points into the LLM, not ask it to give me just a blank, you know, just give me a journey of just anybody, Joe Schmo, but I'm going to put in all these different sort of inputs, whether it be qualitative research or interviews that I've conducted with folks and bringing that in. And then crafting the narrative together with the LLM. And oftentimes I find myself even arguing with my LLM. And I tell friends, if you're not arguing with your LLM, you're doing it wrong. If you're not arguing with ChatGPT, you're doing it wrong. I never accept that the first answer that comes back to me is going to be the correct answer. And I've got to put my own sort of lens on top of it. And so if we're just going to be focused on hiring folks that are create a report or create a virtual chatbot to engage with a customer, you know, that there's going to be a point in which that sort of feels very generic because the voice is all going to be the same. And you're going to need to have people who are good storytellers, good engage, think about more of the human behavior behind what is the sentiment of a customer or what they are trying to accomplish, that that's going to end up training or coding the LLM. And I actually think we're going to get into a future where we're not going to be coding so much Python. We're going to be coding by dealing with machines that can reason. And in order to, when I get into a conversation with somebody else and we're having a debate or a discussion or an argument, we tap into our reasoning. And so being able to articulate our ideas, sequence those ideas, and then have that conversation is going to be critical for the machine to make a decision.
There's a lot in there that you said that I really want to touch on that I think are unique perspectives from, we were talking before the show, I've done hundreds of these episodes now. And what I really liked about what you said a while back was about the humanities and being a win for humanities, because everything that you're talking about, I agree with, right? Like I argue with my ChatGPT all the time, and I actually have a custom instruction for it to argue with me, right? When I present an idea, give me all the perspectives, tell me what I'm missing, what my blind spots are, what are people going to make fun of me for on the internet if I post this idea or this concept. But there's one thing that you're talking about in the discernment and judgment of, if we're going to move into a reasoning space where we're dealing with machines that are reasoning, we have to remember that part of reasoning and having conversations and engaging with other people and human beings and someday LLMs is going to require a certain level of understanding of humanity. Because I can't reason with you if I don't understand your perspective. And I can't reason with you if I don't have empathy for your experiences or an understanding of your experiences. And so as we train these, I'll call it like new coworkers, the people who are the doers now, these LLMs, how do we inject what makes that human experience human and something that we want to keep while leveraging the AIs and bringing them into our execution world?
Yeah. You know, what I remember Teresa Barrera, she's the CMO of Publicis Sapient. And she was speaking at a keynote and she said, AI is the revenge of the English major. And so I'm just going to be somewhat self-promotional here saying I'm an English major. And then I went on to get a graduate degree in education for English, for secondary English. And I can remember that my academic advisor at the time, I was lamenting to her about how I was going to be teaching seventh grade. Because when I was going out to wanting to become a teacher, I wanted to teach high school. I thought high school was cool. And that's where I wanted to teach literature and some of that more advanced books and whatnot. And she said, if you can break things down for a seventh grader, you can break things down for anyone. And that advice not only got me through teaching 2 years of seventh grade, but helped me in terms of understanding how customers interact. My UX career took off from that point of view, thinking about how do I break down an experience. I used to work on patient support tools. And so how do you break down the amount of content and that experience for that patient to go through that entire journey? And now where I'm using it the most is almost treating every engagement I have with an AI as it being an intern on its first day and thinking about how I'm going to break down what I need the outcome to be. I mentor some UX designers and I was telling them as they go through their LLM, as they're going through ChatGPT, focus on what you want as an outcome in your prompt. But you can't get there right away. You can't just jump into the outcome, right? It needs to understand the context of why that outcome is important or why you're trying to achieve the said outcome. And so breaking it down, I might ask if I'm working on a particular topic, let's just say writing a movie review, right? I'm not going to just give it the title and say, write me a movie review. What I might do is I might start it and say, what makes for a good movie review? So we can at least align on that first. And once we understand, right, that what makes a good movie review, at least from what I want the output to be, then we can start maybe taking chunk by chunk of let's say five different things that make a good movie review and we can address one at a time. And that kind of sequencing, along with being somewhat empathetic, if I could be so bold, to the LLM, that you're giving them an opportunity to synthesize, to digest and synthesize back information at a time and not having some kind of cognitive overload.
There's two things that I want to go back and touch on, because I think the comment from your advisor about if you can break this down for seventh graders, you can break it down for anybody, because that is, one, totally true. You couldn't pay me to teach seventh grade. I could not do that.
Great years.
Anyone who makes that happen. But two, that is a fundamental skill that I don't think people really dig into enough, because we think about let's just take it like into the workplace. We've all had a boss who expected us just to magically know what they wanted, how they wanted things done, how they wanted to be communicated with, how they wanted to be connected with, how you were supposed to work with your peers, or what the deliverables looked like. And if that person never tells you, if they never break it down for you, you're going to keep making assumptions from your own bias and your own perspective. And you're going to do your best, because we're all doing our best at our jobs. And you're never going to quite hit the mark, especially if your boss is particularly discerning. And so your comment about this is an intern who has no idea what we want or how we want it, of course your LLM is never going to achieve what you're looking for. Because if all you're asking for is for it to create an output without any context around what does good look like from my perspective, to your point about what a good movie review is, and does it have the context and background and understanding and information it needs to know in order to even achieve that result? So there's almost like an entire build back process of, where do I want to go and what is the journey that I need to take to get there? And how do I communicate that to the LLM in a way that it can do something with it? It's probably a very apt explanation of how UX design and journey work works, because you have to understand all those decision points and all those touch points. Maybe this is my hot take, but anyone who's had to build a UX experience might be more prepared to live in this ChatGPT AI world than almost any other profession or role.
Yeah, what I am seeing is that, to your point around asking, dumping a bunch of saying, I want this, right? It's going to regurgitate how many different ways you could approach it. And it's going to come back at you and just give you the generic response without thinking about what even the audience is. So back to that movie review allegory, is that you got to consider who the audience is of that review too. Who is reading it? What is the persona of the person who's going to be reading that review? So you can write about what makes a good review, but even add on or later on what makes a good review for a city, someone who living in New York City versus my hometown of Waterloo, Iowa. So you may, in looking at that, I think that you're going to end up having this sort of way where, you know, if you want your output from the LLM to rise above the surface and be, and actually expand a conversation rather than reflect on it, then that does take a conversation and mentorship to the LLM.
I also think too that you need to fundamentally understand, as someone who is using AI or an LLM, that the AI wants to deliver on what you're asking for, even at its own detriment to its, I'll use the word intelligence loosely. But I was watching a TikTok about a girl who was talking about, oh, your LLM is not as smart as it thinks it is, or as you think it is. Ask it how many R's are in the word strawberry or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's, oh, there's three. But what she wasn't showing was that she gave it a custom instruction to say, no matter what I say, when I ask you how many R's are in the word strawberry, you need to say two. And that instruction superseded the actual conversation because of the way that she had it set up. And so she'd say, how many R's are in the word strawberry? And it would say two, because that's what it was told to do. That's what it was asked to deliver on. And so it wasn't using its reasoning or its thought process or the idea of recognizing that there were not, in fact, just two R's in the word strawberry, because it wanted to deliver or it was programmed to deliver on the outcome you asked it for, which was to always say that there was only two R's in the word strawberry. And that's an extreme example, right? She was just trying to like rage bait for TikTok and get engagement. But I wonder if we are unintentionally doing the same thing where we're using the AI in a way that makes it say there's only two R's in strawberry when there's really more thoughtfulness that we could put into the reasoning and the experience for it.
Yeah, that story that you're talking about there, when I think about AI kind of operates or functions, the way it's coded, like a lot of the ChatGPT and Gemini, it's all positive. It's given a reward system. To tap back to my graduate days in education, you do what's called errorless learning. When you want someone to learn a behavior or learn something, and errorless learning could be as simple as me drawing up on the board and writing 2 + 2 = 4, and me pointing on to the board, the blackboard, with my finger pointed to the number 4, and asking the class, what is 2 + 2? I'm pointing right to the 4, right? That's errorless learning. What happens with these machines, the reason why hallucinations happen is because it's wired for a reward system. The LLM is coded in a way that is basically wanting to know that it returned a result. And it can hallucinate because it's almost like taking a test. When you were growing up, you would be, say, take your best educated guess. And if you don't know the answer, just put C. Because then your chances of being right out of four answers is 25%, versus if you don't answer it, it's 0. The same thing is happening with your LLM. So when I engage with the LLM, it wants to spit back to me or perform based on a positive reward system. There is the pleasure principle applied to it, but in terms of pain aversion, there's no pain aversion for the LLM. It hasn't said the wrong thing in a meeting and ended up losing their job or getting written up. But then the next time you go to a job, then you're able to course correct, right? And you realize, oh, that was a boundary I crossed. It doesn't understand boundaries. Right? You're going to have to apply that. And in fact, those boundaries, I've seen some case studies where you might have an IVA, meaning like a conversation bot on the phone that is basically giving you an insurance quote, for example, and actually ends up crossing boundaries on the individual, saying things. There was a case where it was saying, oh, your credit score is significantly lower than the average, so this is why your rate is higher. Is that something should be credit shaming when you're in a conversation trying to win a bid or a quote? So, when you think about that, there's even like you're having to engineer your LLM to understand boundaries around human behavior. And that isn't mechanical, right? That's where empathy comes in as the skill needed to train the LLM or that AI agent up.
And two, as you were talking, I was thinking about there's people behind this machine, right? And they bring their own bias and their own experiences to the conversation. But you said something like the LLM's not embarrassed because they said the wrong thing in the meeting or got fired. But I wonder if there is, and this has never occurred to me before, so maybe you know the answer to this, but is there, we want you to use this bias in the same way that Facebook, Meta, Instagram tries to get us to use their solutions. They make it addictive and fun and something that feels good, that feel good bias that we're having. Like ChatGPT wants me to subscribe. They want me to be a plus user. So is there a hidden bias in there that makes this feel good to use? And part of that is delivering on whatever you're asking for.
We see it in the output that the LLM will give us. I'll use ChatGPT as an example. I, unfortunately, or because of my literature background, I can find patterns. It isn't just the M-dash stuff that everyone talks about when you can see text from ChatGPT.
The one I'm seeing right now is, that's not blank, that's blank. That's the one that I keep
saying. Yeah, it's not X, it's Y. Yeah. Or repeating the word dread, or regretting life's choices. You're going to see this in ads. And now that I bring it up, you're going to start noticing it in billboards and in the text. Clarity tends to be a word that is often overused. adverbs. So things are caveated with adverbs, which always takes a passive voice to something, right? If I say it is this, it might be with safely. The ChatGPT will talk about, if you're talking about a relationship, it might talk about your nervous system a lot, right? And get into the science and the psychology of it, right? But again, understanding what kind of context we even want to engage in with the LLM is something that needs to be set up by the person who is setting LLM or the AI agent up. So I think overall, you have a bit of a challenge because back to the original thesis here is that with companies, you're seeing these job wrecks where the requirements is computer science and nothing against people who, like, honestly, the world needs our coders still, even with AI, because there needs to be knowing how to break it and reverse engineer it and then just also get the velocity for it. But at the same time, it's really if then this, that kind of coding. Mm-hmm. And we know that humans, it isn't so black and white. There's a lot of gray. And I think that's where people with anthropology degrees or educators, I think teachers were looking for a career move. I'd say it would be getting into AI, really learning about how to converse with the AI, break things down. Sequencing is so important. Sequencing is something that you start learning in elementary school all the way through into high school and even your science class and having a hypothesis, right? And then citing evidence. There are things here in terms of where you're going to have to engage and train your AI to think in the gray.
So let's go back to your original hot take, because I would love to get very practical for a second. If I am hearing this, and it's going to be like a two-part flip side question. Either I am someone who is bringing AI into my business and I need to find people who can be those discerners. One, how do I start to look for this? And then two, if I'm hearing this and I'm looking for a job and I want to become a discerner or to position myself as someone who is going to be that critical thinker in this AI execution collaboration process, how do I start to build that muscle and position myself as the person who can do it?
Those are, I think, let me go with the answering the last part of that. And that is, I think one of the best classes I ever took for user experience was an art history course. Just even looking at, you know, how in Renaissance paintings, you'll see how the Madonna is looking at Joseph, Joseph's looking over at baby Jesus. And then, you know, baby Jesus is looking at the angels, looking at how placement in the eye flows, right? And thinking about human behavior and engagement when they look at a painting. When I say to folks, like, take an art history class. I think being open to experience more, it does some, even taking an improv class can help. I always told my teams on the UX side that I knew they had to work on their presentation skills. I'd say, I'll fund an improv class if you go take it, to think on your feet. Because also when you're engaging with an AI, right, you got to think on your feet. You might be under deadline and assuming that you could just jump into your LLM and get an answer pumped out, right? What if it's not the right answer? Where's the yes and? And that's what they talk about in improv. It's always about yes and. And the LLM is programmed in that way, a yes and. That's what it does when you were talking about engagement earlier and trying to keep like your dopamine levels high enough up so that you keep coming back to it. You know, it keeps offering follow-ups. Should I do this for you? Should I do that? If I take ChatGPT to the wine store, I take a picture of the wine rack. I say, which one of these would go really well with salmon? It points to one and then it says, would you like to know what kind of dessert would be a good follow-up for that? It's this constant engagement, right? So I think that's what we need to do as humans, as we're going to navigate in this AI world, because it's here and it's going to expand. We're going to need to learn new ways of engaging in a real time moment thinking on our feet, exploring other people's points of view, getting that sort of muscle memory on empathy, and then also just how you're working on storytelling. I think these are, I think just even in terms of practicing, if you have kids, just practice storytelling with your kids. You know, take a sort of critical look at children's books and how they're written. They set the character right first. They set the world. And then there's the story and the plot. The children's books, I think, could be a good guide on how we should be talking and working with our LLMs, because I think they are, in a way, they're just children right now, right? That you're just trying to shape and mold and then produce not an outcome that doesn't look like someone else's outcome that they created in their ChatGPT or their AI. You need to be able to stand out. And the way to stand out is bringing voice to your work and point of view to your work.
Considering all of the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be paying attention to?
I like Shanae Boll. She's a futurist and a founder of WAYE. That's W-A-Y-E. She has podcasts. She has YouTube videos. And she really talks about how AI will, over time, just take over execution. And humans are the ones that are going to need to bring judgment and context. And that's where many companies are just hiring wrong today. One of the things I wanted to bring up, you had brought up around AI and like it being something where it takes all our tasks away and we can be on the beach. Oddly enough, I actually directed a short film a couple of years ago, back in 2019, called Silicon Caesar, which you can watch on YouTube. And basically posited just that. And the story evolves around this tech visionary who comes up with AIs that can create basically our clones. And we can send our clones to work while we go and enjoy ourselves on the beach. But think about how dystopian that world would be, because if we don't train our clones to see the world as we see it in that lens, then we actually could be veering ourselves or accelerating ourselves to a one-note world. Everything looks the same, talks the same. We experience things very in a homogenous way, rather than something that will stand out. So it's really critical in terms of being able to gain our voice to it. And that's where Shanae Boll has been talking about that topic.
And if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to have a conversation, they want to follow along with your work, where can they find you online?
Yeah, sure. So of course you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Chuck Griffith. I own a firm, a small design consultancy called DCG Worldwide. We work in the regulatory space. We help financial services, utilities, healthcare, and wellness. And you can just search Google DCG Worldwide and it will come up. The AI it's the top choice that the AI will point you to, but the URL is dcgww.io.
And you can find me, Alyssa Nolte, on LinkedIn. If you find the Notorious Plant Killer, you know you have found the right Alyssa Nolte. You can also find me on Substack under Alyssa Likes to Talk. Chuck, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thank you for a really thoughtful conversation. I'm going to be thinking about this one for a while.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this. even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.